Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Boy, did we have an active and great first hour. I hope you enjoyed it too. I did, because I learned an awful lot from Jason Tetro. JasonTetro.com is his website. He has that wonderful book that we just went over, that is The Germ Files, and what he teaches about bacteria, probiotics, how to get safe. You'll want to hear that segment again, at least I do, and you can anytime at RadioMD.com. Go to the archives of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. You can listen to the show anytime after it's posted. Usually by 7 p.m. tonight it will be posted. But you can listen to the show live anytime when you listen to it live, 3 to 5 and 5 to 7 on Saturdays on RadioMD.com. If you want to hear what we're going to discuss the week in the week, you can send us an email to udocs, youdocs, at gmail.com, youdocs, at gmail.com, and just put subscribe in the subject line, and we'll get you the guest for the week, who's coming, if you will, this next week. And if you want to get subscribed to the news of the week, actually what we cover, plus all of the great news, all the stories behind it, you can tell me, subscribe to News of the Week as well as to the radio show outline, and we'll get you that. That usually comes out right after the show. That's when I send it out to those people who do subscribe. Let me go over the stories that we're going to talk about this week, this session. Ebola returns to Liberia. The WHO says flare-ups are expected. What does this mean for you? Gary Ginsberg is going to talk about another story I was going to talk about, so we're going to leave it to Gary at 17 after. The story behind this, did the Dr. Oz show make a difference? Yes. The FDA proposes a limit on arsenic in infant rice cereals. The only reason the FDA knew about it was Dr. Oz's show started sampling the arsenic levels in apple juice and in rice, and both of those, he's made a difference, even though the FDA initially denied it had a problem. And even though Rick Belzer of the ABC News criticized Dr. Oz for doing it, has anyone apologized to him? They really should, because he's made a difference when they didn't and weren't doing their jobs well enough. Mediterranean diet wins again, this time on bones. We'll talk about that. The Cleveland Clinic study reveals heart attacks occur in younger people with or undertreated high blood pressure, with smoking, who are obese. How do we get people to take their blood pressure medicines? And what role in the heroin epidemic do MDs play? Nearly all U.S. docs overprescribe painkillers. That's the story about this. And when we get to Gary Ginsberg, we're going to have four wonderful stories. One is something you asked him. That is, I'm very interested in buying a house that has just been inspected. The inspector said there was an environmental problem with the attic insulation. It's a substance called vermiculite. What's the problem? And should I not buy this house? Does it make a difference? We're going to get that from Gary Ginsberg, as well as the data on the FDA and infant rice cereals and cashiers. What should they do to protect themselves from BPA and BPS? But first, I want to go to this story on nearly all doctors in the United States overprescribe addictive painkillers. Now, I'm going to take a sip of coffee, if you'll pardon me, because my voice is getting a little hoarse. Thank you for allowing me to do that, for understanding at least. When American doctors give their patients narcotic painkillers, 99% of us hand out prescriptions that exceed the federally recommended 3-day dosage limit. Well, guess what? I can't even get to see the patient in 3 days. My schedule is way too booked up. And everyone else, we have a 6-week waiting list for return appointments here. And it's not because we aren't trying to do the best we can. It's because we have too many patients. So we've hired more people, yeah, and we are hiring more people, but it still is a problem. And I've got to see a patient every 3 days. The poor patient has to take off from work and see me because you can't prescribe a narcotic pain killer, that is a pain medicine drug, without the, seeing the patient in person. You can't do it over the phone. So they have to take off from work to see me, to fit into the schedule to see me. Well, in fact, I'm not even allowed to do telemedicine with them. Telemedicine we can do with a lot of other patients, but not for a narcotic. So they got to see me. And nearly a quarter of us give out month-long prescriptions. Well, that's where they get diverted for other people's use. But they aren't getting diverted much because heroin on the street now is cheaper than my painkiller prescriptions. It used to be we thought 1 in 7,000 people would get hooked if they really had pain to a painkiller prescription. I still think that's true, but now the drugs are much better than the old morphine and codeine and that type of drug, that is Percocet and the new oxycodone and Vicodin are much better, and so they're saying that many more people are getting hooked on them. Maybe one in as many as 1 in 25 of the people we give a painkiller to, so only give 3-day prescriptions. Well, guess what? It's really hard to give only a 3-day prescription. How often have you had appointments every 3 days with your docs? So I just think this is a very bad precedent to set, that you can only give a 3-day prescription, and if you're going to only be able to give a 3-day prescription, you've got to be able to renew it with a phone call or at least with a virtual visit on the phone on a telemedicine secure site that are now popping up. So that's my point of view on that. The benefits of spicing up a breastfeeding diet for a mom. Well, guess what? If mom during pregnancy eats garlic, eats a lot of spicy foods, the kid actually breastfeeds better afterwards, assuming mom is still going to eat those foods afterwards. So breastfed babies are generally easier to feed later because they've had this kind of variety experience of different flavors from the first stages of life. Now, you'd say, well, wait a second, we don't need to feed our babies any better. Our babies are already getting overweight. Okay, so I don't have an answer for that other than you won't have as picky an eater, and maybe the flavors you love, if they're healthy flavors and spices, the child will love and use spices in place of just quantity as something they eat for the rest of their life. Next article that is a new article that is really important in this week is schools are slow to learn that sleep deprivation hits teenagers hardest. That is, does the school adjust its schedule to the teenager so it can start a little later and last a little longer in the day? Is that the way we should do it? Well, when we come back after we talk to Gary Ginsberg, we'll get to that. But we're going to talk to Gary Ginsberg about why cashiers should change the behavior, and maybe you shouldn't ask for a receipt or take it. And then Dr. G's mailbag, we've got a great question on attic insulation, and of course the FDA studies on the limits on arsenic in babies' rice. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. It's a great show. We've got some great stories today and had a great guest already. Gary Ginsberg coming up, my favorite segment. We're here every Saturday, 3 to 5 and 5 to 7 p.m. Hope you enjoy it on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Stay well.
There's
more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. My favorite section of the show is always Gary Ginsberg, whatstoxic.com. What's toxic, what's not is the name of this segment. And Gary, the FDA looks like it's done something that follows what Dr. Oz advocated, that is putting a limit on the arsenic in rice, at least in the rice syrups. What's the story, and how did they come to do it? And did they ever apologize to Dr. Oz when they attacked him for saying that the rice in America?
Well, that was mostly about the arsenic in apple juice and how much of it was organic versus inorganic. And, you know, I, as a scientist, choose to look forward and try to make sure that the latest science addresses the public health needs. And that's what FDA is attempting to do with this latest. You know, they did a serious look at baby rice cereal. And while there's still some uncertainties, they set a number of 100 parts per billion for the limit of how much arsenic can be in baby rice cereal. Now, why did they pick baby rice cereal? Number one is because of all the different types of people and age groups that might be eating rice products. Babies at this critical stage of first solid foods stand out because they have such small body weight, they have a relatively large intake rate, stand out as getting potentially the highest dose of arsenic from rice. And so they wanted to make sure that manufacturers, suppliers, formulators of the rice cereal are using, what is a reasonable target, one that has safety in mind and practicality in mind. They don't want to get rid of all the rice on the market. But, you know, this limit is something that's achievable and something that is reasonably in the direction of health protection. Ideally, with arsenic, the less the better. But that's not practical. There's arsenic in a lot of different foods. It's recently been banned from turkeys as a preservative there. It's been banned from chickens. FDA has taken actions in recent years against arsenicals in poultry. Now, obviously, with the 10 parts per billion target for apple juice, and now with 100 parts per billion in baby rice cereal, the industry at least knows where it stands. Industry probably will need to do a lot of self-monitoring, and they don't want to get embarrassed and fined by FDA for having out-of-spec rice cereal for babies. So they're going to have to look at what kinds of rice contamination they get coming into their production plant, make sure that it's below 100 so that what they end up producing for baby consumption is not above 100. So it's a definite big step in the right direction, because at least now there's a standard before there, or a guideline at least, before there wasn't any, and there was really no reason for industries to even check.
And do you think that we will be able to have this? In other words, part of this is it's in the ground, right? It's in the, it's been there because of the cotton farmers, I assume.
Yeah, but Mike, we know that different parts of the world have different background levels of arsenicals in soil, whether it was pesticide related or whether, like, for example, California rice tends to not have the same problem that the middle of the country had with the cotton fields going over to rice production. Some of the Indian rices that are imported from overseas also look lower, although we don't have all that much data. So, you know, it is going to be up to the manufacturers now to do a better, clearer job of sourcing their product from as low as possible. And, you know, that might drive up the price a little bit, I'm guessing, but I don't think it'll be crazy. And the other major public health message here is that there is no need for parents to give rice cereal to their, newly on solids baby as the only baby rice. So diversify. You know, there's iron fortified oats and iron fortified, wheat based cereals. You know, rice was picked because it was, you know, by a lot of pediatricians because it was hypoallergenic. But even the American Pediatrics Academy has come out and said that diversify the kind of infant formula, but the infant foods that your baby gets. It's, you know, most of these are very low in allergenicity. So yeah, diversify. Not steady rice diet because it does still tend to have more arsenic than anything else out there. But you know, some baby rice cereal is at these limits will be okay.
Now let's go to your mailbag because this is a intriguing one. This is from a listener who says, "I'm very interested in buying a house that we had just inspected. The inspector said there was an environmental problem with the attic insulation. It's a substance called vermiculite, which he said can cause cancer. He said you can't get rid of it. Should I not buy this house?"
Yeah, no, that is a great question. Apparently, or approximately about 10 million houses in the United States are contaminated by a form of attic insulation. Could be in the walls as well, but it's worse if it's in the attic because you might actually, might be out in the open. It's called vermiculite. Now, it's this puffed, vermiculite is a puffed cellulose type substance, which is natural from the earth, but where they mined it out in Montana, there were veins, major veins of asbestos that contaminates the vermiculite that came from this one vermiculite mine out in Montana. And that mine was the major one that was supplying insulation from the 1920s to about 1990. And so the testing for this, Mike, the shame of it is that you can't, you know, the home inspector can't say, oh, well, I'll just grab some and see if it's got a lot of asbestos in it. Because, you know, it might. But the testing does not do a good job, once it's in the vermiculite base, of telling how much asbestos is there. So there's no good test for it. And the CDC and the EPA all say that you should just assume if you've got vermiculite in your attic that it's got asbestos in it. And what do they tell you to do? Leave it alone. And in fact, if it's exposed and, you know, you can just see it, is the advice is don't even go up in the attic. Find a different place to store your stuff. So I would say to this caller that if having an attic is important for you to store stuff, if it's important for, you know, your quality of life in whatever way, the house may not be, there's a big strike against the house. Obviously, buying a house has many, many factors. You can get the vermiculite removed. Your contractor was wrong in saying you can't touch it. A licensed asbestos abatement company, at a cost of significant thousands of dollars, depending on how big the job is, can come and safely remove it, just like you can remove the pipe wrap in your basement if it's got asbestos. So it can be removed, but I wouldn't do it. You know, the homeowner should not handle it. And so it is a problem, you know, and it is a factor in a real estate transaction. You know, if the basement is dry, you never need to go up to the attic, fine. But this goes not only for people buying houses, but if you have a house. I mean, my house was built in 1750, and when I bought it, it had no insulation, and I put insulation in myself, so I know what it is. But if you go up in your attic and you're poking around and you see that you might have this brown material, that might be vermiculite, and you should probably get it checked out.
So brown material.
Yeah, brown. About maybe three or four of these clumps can fit in your hand at one time. So it's somewhat
so
clumpy.
So it's loose material. It wouldn't be packed in like
Exactly. It's not on a big roll, no. It's almost like the chips, like the wood chips you find at a kid's playground.
Gotcha, Gary. Gary Ginsberg, can you hang around for just the last? I want to get the last question in, which is
sure.
Last topic in, and we'll be right back after these important messages. What a great set of questions you've given, but I want to talk about gloving up cashiers. Do they need to glove up? Should you take a receipt? What's the risk? And do you get enough from one receipt? And then, is it true fish oil supplements don't have benefit? We'll
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Michael Roizen, MD.
RadioMD.com.
Here's Dr. Mike.
This is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, and we held Gary Ginsberg over, and you asked a couple of wonderful questions, one of which I picked up to ask Gary myself during the period, and I said, we've got to ask this. So the question is, Gary, does the dust from that vermiculite drift to the rest of the house, or and at how fast a speed does it drift?
No, we don't think that the attic normally would communicate with the rest of the house, the airflow. You know, you don't really have air ducts going up there commonly. And we don't, let's put it this way, low probability, unless you have a heavy asbestos contamination problem in the attic, it's probably not going to get down through the rest of the house from vermiculite for most people. So I would say that, you know, if the vermiculite's all over the floor, if you stepped on it, if it's a mess up there, well, then, yeah, and if you've done a lot of up and downing, then maybe it is worth having someone look at the rest of your house. But in most cases, it's probably not going to have gotten downstairs.
Now, the next question is one on cashiers. A new study showed that the BPS, the substitute for BPA, may be just as bad as the BPA. What does a cashier to do, and what do we as receipt takers do? Do we avoid these receipts? What do we do, Gary?
Yeah, well, so this was suspected for a while now, that knowing that a paper receipt, get this, Mike, a paper receipt that you're handed could be up to 2% of straight, unpolymerized, so which means available, BPA. So normally when we think about BPA, it's in a polymer and some plastic, and there's a very tiny fraction that may be leachable. Here, we're talking about it's all available. There's no polymer here. And that's the way it is on these little receipt papers. And look, I've had my wallet checked, and I'm sure there's cocaine in my wallet, but not because I've ever used it, but because it's on dollar bills that are in circulation. And there is, sure enough, BPA. I have my wallet checked, and there's BPA in my wallet. Again, that's from the handling of receipts and putting the receipts in my wallet, which I always historically used to do. I don't anymore. So, BPA, so this particular study.
So that's one of the tricks we should learn. Don't put a receipt in your wallet.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So this particular study looked at cash register, cashiers, and measured their blood level, I'm sorry, not the blood, the urinary level of BPA before their shift and then after their shift, and compared it to people who don't handle cash register receipts all day. They weren't wearing gloves, and they looked at each one's profile. This one person, I don't know what this he or she was doing, but their level of BPA went up over 100-fold, so a huge spike. Some people had much more moderate spikes. On average, it was about a 2 to 3-fold jump for the cashiers themselves, and that was about 3 or 4-fold higher than the background population for BPA. For BPS, so they also, this was very smart research. They looked at what kind of receipt paper these cashiers were handling, and they knew to either look for BPA or BPS. The people who were handling BPA type receipts, they didn't have any increase in BPS, and vice versa was also true. And the BPS also went up 2 to 3-fold just from one day's shift. And that's a pretty significant rise in blood level, given that there's a background level of BPA in food, especially canned foods. So I would say that, you know, if you're just handling one, the odd receipt from the gas station, and you're only touching it for a brief period of time, and then you're putting it right into the trash, you don't want anybody to see it, maybe you tear it up, probably not a big exposure. I mean, these are cashiers who are handling it all day long, and their blood level went up 2 to 3-fold. But best practice is just say no. With the electronics available we have now, and getting email receipts or whatever, just if you don't need the receipt, if it's for a 50-cent piece of gum, you know, don't take it. They're happy. These cashiers are thrilled to give you a receipt. They feel like they've done their job. You may disappoint them, but you are doing yourself a service to say, no, you don't want it. And you might offer them a pair of gloves and say, you know, it's really safe if you wear these.
So it's much safer if the cashier wears the gloves. I'm wondering, I see, you even see it in ads for one of the tax preparing things about these people. We all save receipts for our taxes.
Right.
That seems like almost a lethal disease. The IRS, another reason to just have a flat tax or something that doesn't have...
Well, I don't know if you could really use this as a way to restructure the IRS, but you could sort of connect that dot. No, I think that there's a lot of receipts out there that you really don't ever have to show your tax account when they're just too small. And, you know, what's great, when I travel now, you get a per diem. You don't have to produce food receipts anymore if you're on business travel. And so you're sitting, why take the receipt and then, you know, you're sitting down to a meal in a cafeteria. You don't need the receipt. At least when I travel, I don't need the receipt even for that. Maybe the IRS does look at business meals, and you might feel like you need to do that. But if you're using a credit card, you could probably find it on your statement.
And one more topic, Gary, because this is actually very interesting, because I still take the gasoline station receipts are, in fact, printed on this thermal paper that has BPA or BPS on it, right?
Exactly, yep.
So one of the keys I learned that you taught me before is, especially at a fast food restaurant, wash your hands after touching a receipt before you touch your food, especially if you're opening the food for your child, for your younger child, for them to get at it, because the younger children are more at risk for the effects. The effects may be, in fact, a lot of stuff, if you will, related to hormonal changes, and those affect kids much more than they affect us old guys. Now, one more thing. What's the story on fish oil supplements? And I'm going to give you my point of view on this, but you give me yours first.
Yeah, well, this was a meta-analysis out of Greece, which looked at a number of recent studies, 24 studies, and the compilation of all the data suggested that there was no consistent benefit of the fish oil supplementation on cardiovascular outcomes. And my take on it is, and I really care a lot about this because we do fish risk assessments, and we look at the benefits, which we attribute a lot to the fish oils. And so for a supplementation study to say there was no benefit when we're attributing the benefit in fish to fish oil, you know, I have to take a hard look at that. But two factors. Number one, the older studies tended to show a benefit to the supplementation. Modern day, a lot of the people in these studies are already on a bunch of cardio drugs that would be lipid lowering, blood pressure lowering, and so the effect of the omega-3 on cardiovascular outcomes, we think, is now being muted, still having an effect, but it's less easy to see because there's so many other drug manipulations in these patients that are not controlled for in the study. And then the second factor is that we believe that there is a saturation level. You only need 250 milligrams a day of omega-3s. The supplements give you a gram a day. You don't need a gram a day. The rest of it's a waste. So in these studies, they aren't controlling how much fish people are eating, and then they're supplementing on top of that with a gram and a half a day, which isn't going to do anything on top of a fish diet. All you need is one salmon meal a week, for example, and you get your dose for the whole week.
When I'll come back, we'll give you my point of view, but my point of view is very different. They've got to control whether it's DHA, EPA, or what the fish oil is. You want to look for the DHA omega-3 amount, and you really do want 900 milligrams a day of that, and I'll come back and tell Gary why I believe so. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Stay well, and come back and listen for what we'll say.
RadioMD.com. It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. What's the date on fish oil? Well, let me give you the specifics. If you're under the age of 50, then 200 milligrams of DHA omega-3 a day is what you want for your eyes, your brain, and to decrease inflammation. ALA, the plant-based stuff that you get from avocados and canola oil, flaxseed, chia seed, walnuts, that's really good for your heart. EPA, which is what is used in most of the studies that Gary Ginsberg just talked about, probably has no specific effect for heart or blood vessels. So the problem with all the studies, they use mainly EPA. And if you're over 50, you want 900 milligrams of DHA a day. That's what it takes to prevent mental decline by about 7 years. And keep your eyes so you have much lower chance by about 50% decrease in macular degeneration risk, the first form of it. So the message is from Gary Ginsberg and from me is remember DHA omega-3 is the one you want if you don't have salmon or ocean trout. They're the only fish consistently with it in the United States in addition to anchovies, but in other countries and in the United States it is salmon and ocean trout. And if you don't get that, get the DHA omega-3 supplements. You can get algal if you're vegetarian. In fact, that's where the fish get it. The fish don't make it. They get it from eating algae and plankton, which get it from the algae. As far as ALA, just eat plenty of omega-3 fatty foods from such as plants, the avocados, canola oil, flaxseed, chia seeds, walnuts are my favorite. Just 12 walnuts, halves a day is plenty to get the right amount of ALA for your heart. Other studies that we got to, and by the way, it was just a great, I think this is a great show today. I learned a ton. You'll want to listen to the interview with Jason Tetreault, Germ Files, and you want to get this book, Germ Files. It is a sensational book. It's even if you do it as what we call bathroom reading or anything, it's magnificent. It's a wonderful book. I loved it and love it. I'm taking it home and going to read it a second time when I have more leisure time than what I had to read it this time. Schools are slow to learn that sleep deprivation hits teenagers hardest. What do we mean by that? Well, we think that schools should adjust their start and end time so that teenagers who sleep too little can get more sleep and then come to school well rested. It's harder than you might think to determine how much sleep an adult actually requires. Modern technology has significantly altered when and how we sleep. Coffee and other stimulants allow us to wake up more quickly. Measuring natural level of sleep would require us to return to probably a simpler time. But the Sleep Foundation released the results of a survey on sleep among people 25 to 55 in 6 countries. Canadians and Mexicans, they sleep 7.1 hours. I knew they were more alert and better rested than I was. Germans, 7 hours. Residents of Britain, 6.8. We, Japanese, and Americans, 6.5 and 6.4. So we bring up the bottom end. We're working harder. I think it's because we're more productive and we're more interested in life. But no doubt, when we're sleeping that little, we, in fact, are not getting enough sleep. You can do catch-up sleep. You can do naps under 40 minutes. But those do make a difference. The more you make, the less you sleep, it turns out. Almost half of people earning less than $30,000 sleep at least 6 hours a night, compared with about a third earning $70,000 or more in the United States. So Americans also sleep less than we used to. In 1942, almost 85% of us slept 7 hours a night. Today, less than 60% of us do. So we need to adjust those sleep hours. The American Academy of Pediatrics is going to have something that to ask schools to start including the extracurricular activities after 8:30 in the morning. Ask Well from the New York Times this week had a study on can vinegar aid weight loss? We don't know the answer to that. Vinegar does change some of the starch you eat into undigestible starch, so you won't eat it, so you won't gain weight from it. It won't let it be digested. The main problem with it is that maybe, however, it may erode teeth and other structures because the acidity of, if you will, the apple cider vinegar does cause teeth to decay. Another study I want to get to, and maybe this will be the last of the day, and I apologize because we ran out of time again for all of our studies. You can get subscribed to all and read the full stories, of, especially the ones we don't get to, as well as learn the lineup of the show by emailing me at udocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com, and we'll send you all of the study, all the stories and the studies we pick, the top 10 certainly, usually the top 20 of the week, of which I only get to about 10 of the studies in the medical literature. But this one is the Mediterranean diet wins again. It helps bones. People who ate the Mediterranean diet, you'd think it doesn't have much calcium, it doesn't have the red meat, strong meat bones, wrong. Mediterranean diet proved to have people who ate it had less bone fractures and less problems over time. Not a lot less, but still it wasn't a diet that weakens your bones or weakens your muscles. There's a study on what I call poison sumac, but sumac is a spice that can help you. As long as you don't get the poison kind, you can learn from our subscription newsletter how to do that. It's free, so you can get it. Another study on mental decline being decreased by exercise, and maybe the exercise helps you because it increases brain-derived neurotrophic growth factor. In this study, they correlated the exercise being a benefit to your mental function, stopping aging decline, making you the equivalent of 10 years younger by this intense exercise because it reduced stress rates. Two other studies, but one of them is that study links kindergarten stumbles with rocky home lives. People who have stress in their childhood, you should see the film Resiliency. It's a new film out, but this was a film based on some real-life data that kids who have rocky home lives when they're very young have stress and need to develop resiliency if they're going to function for the rest of their life. You've been listening to You, the Owner's Manual radio show on Radio MD. It's a great show. Hope you come back and learn how to take control of your health. On Radio MD, stay well. We'll be back next week with new great articles and great information for you to take action steps.